Hey there, and welcome back to another episode of Corinth in Your Car, where we cast pods with a bunch of dad bods, is what we do. Just kidding. I thought about that 2 seconds ago. We're really glad to have you here. In fact, oddly enough, the only one here with a dad bod is actually the one that's not a dad.
Speak for yourself.
I know. That's the way it goes. But hey, it's good to be together. I'm Luke. I'm here with Josh and Adam. We'll do a quick check-in, just like we normally do, and then we'll jump into some sermon recap and always wrap up with something fun. So let's do a check-in with some questions. Hey, guys, what was fun from last week? What did you do that was enjoyable and fun?
Yeah, my dad was in town for like 24 hours, so that was just good. Got to play golf with him, and so that was just a lot of fun. So always good to see Dad. Good to go eat a lot of Mexican food. Watch him eat a lot of Mexican food really
yeah.
How it works.
And where'd you go?
What's San Andres?
San Andres. That's the one in Monroe Public.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. It's pretty good.
I really like their, of course, you can't get it for dinner because it's like a breakfast menu item. You can get it like at lunchtime, I guess, but mm-hmm. there's a breakfast burrito.
Mm-hmm.
It's very good.
Is it?
Very, very good over there. So highly recommend.
I can't get away from like their, quesabirria tacos are just like, they're really good.
Yeah.
And then the fried fish tacos are good too.
Yeah. Yeah. Fried fish tacos are awesome. Where'd you guys golf?
Bear Creek.
Bear Creek?
Bear Creek.
Still under construction?
Still under construction. So number 13 is still.
Still a par four, right?
Still a par four,
it is a par four.
But it still makes it makes it harder, I think.
Really?
Yes. Because it's like a 200-yard tee shot to the green.
Straight.
Narrow. And there's no real place to lay up or anything like that.
Yeah, so you pretty much aim for the green.
Yeah, it just psychs you out.
Yeah, it's more like, it plays like a more like a long par three.
Yeah.
But you still get to count it as a par four because you're.
Yeah, and so you can still
for
bogey.
For me, I'm a bad
golfer. I think I ended up with a bogey.
Yeah.
Still on a par four.
Yeah, I was playing in a scramble tournament on that hole one day, and this was before it was under construction, so we're on the tee pad.
Mm-hmm.
And it was. Like, it's almost impossible to see the group ahead of you.
Yes.
Whenever you're there.
Yeah.
And we had thought that they were long gone.
Yeah, no.
And someone I was playing with who goes to this church, I won't reveal his name, but he stepped up and he drove it. And it was a great drive
mm-hmm.
Because it hit one of the other guys in the back.
Oh, my goodness.
on the way down in the middle of the fairway, you know? So
right, yeah.
We were okay. But, yeah, that was something.
Because there's like a valley
crazy.
Gully that
you can't see.
You can't see.
Past it,
you have to wait until you see the guys on the green.
Well, cool, man. Cool. Golf, Mexican food, can't beat that.
No, that's pretty.
Your dad,
pretty,
all that sort of stuff.
So, pretty good.
Josh, what about you, man? What was something that was fun from last week?
Took my kids out to get pizza on Pi Day. We talked about that last week on the podcast, how it was 3.14 last Thursday.
That's right.
So we actually did two pies. We did a pizza pie. And then we went to Kroger and got a key lime pie.
Ooh.
So double pie day.
Different kind of pies.
For us.
Yeah.
Then Dominic played soccer Saturday. Their team did well. It was super warm and they played hard and they won. And I'm just proud of them there. And my in-laws are in town this week and I love my in-laws. All right. So no mother-in-law jokes or anything like that for me.
Cause there you go.
They love me. I love them. It's good. Yeah. Glad to have them here. Sasha's on a field trip right now. Overnight field trip.
Sweet.
Mm.
So the in-laws came in to help, and they're awesome. They Dale fixes things around the house that I'm not skilled enough or too lazy to do. So
there you go.
I now have drywall. I had drywall. But to fix a patch, I have the tray and the knife.
Bloody knife.
And the two sizes of knives and all that stuff. So
different sizes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Got to apply it with one size and spread it with another. So
okay.
I'm learning things.
There we
go. I should know how to do that already, but I don't.
Yeah.
So
hey, it's fine.
Yeah.
Cool.
Why should you already know how to do that? I don't know how to do that.
Because I'm a homeowner and I don't know.
Oh, my.
It's just like rubbing butter on a piece of bread. You're just pasting the wall, you know? That's all it is.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Something like
so,
that.
Yeah.
Well, that sounds fun.
Good stuff.
You mentioned March 14th, Pi Day. This is a fun fact. That was Tristan and I's first date, March 14th,
all right.
2020. So
where'd you go?
That one's a good one. We went to an empty Texas Roadhouse.
Oh, because everybody was
March 14th, 2020 was.
Oh, that was a pretty rough day.
Pretty rough day. So yeah. We were like, yeah, well, I've got a date, so I'm not going to stay home. I got to get to this. So we were like one of three people in the Texas Roadhouse. It was pretty fun. So all the fun stuff. I had a lot of fun this last week. I played in a disc golf tournament on Saturday, and the first round was really fun because I shot really well, and the second round was not really fun because I went from tied for fourth place to finishing ninth place. So,
did you get hit in the back with a disc?
No, I didn't. No. I have that has happened to me before. What? My little brother, Wade, did it. Oh, what a punk.
On
purpose? What would hurt worse, the ball or the disc?
It depends.
Probably the ball.
The ball, I think it kind of depends on speed and point of contact.
Sure,
impact. Yeah.
Because like a disc getting moving pretty fast, if it gets you in the right spot, it'll hurt a lot. But a ball,
water
of course.
On myself over here.
I don't know. Yeah. Either way, it would stink. It would stink. But that was a lot of fun to be out there playing some disc golf. So got another round this week, which is going to be fun. Hey, what was not so fun from last week? So we talked about the highlight. What about this last week? Was just something not so fun?
So for me, playing golf with Dad yesterday,
uh-huh.
My golf nightmare happened. So I hit a hole in one.
Woohoo!
On a penalty shot.
Yeah. How does that work?
So
it's a par three.
Uh-huh. Which one?
16 at Bear Creek. So it's about 90 yards.
Yep.
Got my 56-degree wedge in my hand.
Yep.
Step up to the box, hit it, blade it, and just hit it. Like, if there weren't for the trees behind the green to the left, it would have gone 170 yards. I mean, just like...
Which, if you don't know golf, you're not supposed to...
You're not supposed to be able to do it.
56 wedge.
Not that far.
That
no.
far, yeah.
So I just drop another ball. I'm irritated. I'm mad. Talking to myself. And drop the ball. I hit it. And Dad's like, oh, I think you hit that too far. I was like, no. And then it just drops, rolls right into the cup.
Oh, wow.
Nice.
And I'm just like, are you
Yeah, it's
me?
A mix because it's like, this is so amazing, but it doesn't feel like it should.
No, I wasn't was even excited. Right. Dad said the look on my face was just priceless. Like, it was just like, just irritation and dismay.
Yeah.
Of like, that happened on a penalty shot.
Yeah.
And so I can't even
so
say.
It's,
yeah,
so
nice
got
par.
A two?
Nice
I got
par.
A par. So it's three from the
three.
Tee.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, because you take a penalty
the OB,
plus the first
yeah.
hit.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah. Drop two, hit
What a
three.
Par, though. That's probably your best par ever.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So, yeah, golf nightmare. The only thing would have been worse would have been if I would have done it and Dad wasn't there and there was nobody there to witness it.
Yeah.
That's the only way to make it worse.
Yeah.
So, well, I guess the only other way to do it would be for me to skip church to go play golf. And have nobody there with me.
Yeah.
And then do it on a mulligan or something like that.
Yeah. That's fun.
So
I was looking at trying to get out to a course with Tristan tomorrow, but it's going to rain all day again.
It
it's
is.
Like four Fridays in
it's
a row.
Been
it's been just
awful.
Rain. So
Saturday looks okay. Fingers crossed. Because, like I said, in-laws are in town. So hopefully we still play so they can see Dominic play soccer.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
What was something this last week, Josh, that wasn't so fun?
Hmm. I don't know, it's been a good week, really.
Yeah.
I don't really have much that's gotten me down. I guess if I had to say something, it would just be that Sasha's been having some events at school. And so,
sure.
Like, Pi Day, it was me and the kids, which was fun. But she wasn't there. So that would be a bummer. Like, the whole family didn't get to do
like
that.
Like, school events, not, like, tragic events going on
Correct.
School.
Yeah. School events that she's a part of.
Yeah.
Fun things to plan and to...
Yeah.
And to...
There have been some events taking place at the school, and it's just made it a rough week.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
I love it. I'll just... One word, pollen.
Oh, yeah.
It's snowing yellow in Georgia right now, and I hate it.
Oh, it's not even bad yet, man.
It's
not. It's dusty.
So oddly enough, the... for me, it's the first couple of weeks that it starts to do it is the worst for me.
Yeah.
And then whenever it gets really bad later on, like I'm still affected by it, but it's not as bad, I guess. I don't know, because I had already kind of adjusted and gotten used to it to a certain extent. But that's not been fun, the pollen. Hey, here we go. Next week. We got a weekend coming up pretty soon. What are you looking forward to? What will be fun for this upcoming week?
What will be fun?
What will be fun? Or what are you hoping will be fun?
For this upcoming week. So, it's Easter week, and so I'm looking forward to Sunday, and that should be fun.
Yeah.
What is my brother's birthday is and your dad's birthday.
Yeah,
and,
Tuesday? Tuesday.
Yeah, March 26th.
26th. March 26th.
Yeah, one of the greatest days in history.
There we go.
Yeah. So that's all fun, and yeah, just looking forward to some days that end in Y. That's kind of what I'm looking forward to.
Days that end in Y.
Yeah. Not with me asking why, yeah. But just...
Yeah. Oh, man, why?
I can't get to sleep for an hour because I'm wrestling philosophically with why.
Yeah. Josh, what about you? What will be fun this week?
Yeah, I kind of already mentioned doing soccer, hopefully. Fingers crossed the rain is done by then, hopefully. Yep. In Los Angeles town. And right after that, they leave. So hopefully they'll get to see him. And then kids are out of school, I think, next Friday is when they start, and we have a break as well, CLC.
Yeah.
So we have kind of a little spring break, and a small group is planning a Seder meal again, so that's going to be fun.
Yeah,
so
that's going to be fun.
Yeah.
That's going to be cool.
A few highlights.
Yeah, I will echo that Seder meal. I had forgotten that it was on my calendar until you mentioned it, so I'm excited about that. But Saturday is hopefully going to be a really fun day for Tristan and I. I have a disc golf round with a league in the morning. It'll probably be wet in the morning still, but I'll still get to throw some plastic, so that'll be fun. And then after that, I think we're going to go do some axe throwing with her parents for a George Walton baseball fundraiser.
Okay.
And then after that, someone grabbed some tickets and invited us to go to the Savannah Bananas game up in Gwinnett County, where the Stripers play. So
all day long, it'll be throwing things. Throwing discs, throwing
axes and
throwing baseballs, maybe.
Well, I probably won't throw baseballs.
You could.
Yeah, I don't know. But yeah, Savannah Bananas.
Basically,
the Harlem Globetrotters of baseball. Yep. So
yep. Fun.
Yeah, weather permitting, we're going Friday
to the Bananas game.
Yeah,
sweet.
But
you'll have to see.
I don't think the weather's going to permit.
Yeah.
So I don't know what they do about that.
Yeah, you'll have to.
Do they reschedule? I mean,
like tomorrow, Friday.
Thursday.
Today's Thursday. Yeah. So tomorrow, you would Friday, go you're going.
With, yeah. Okay. Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. They'll it'll be interesting.
Yeah. So I'll either go to the Bananas game or go see the new Ghostbusters movie.
Ghostbusters. Yeah. Give or take.
Give or take. I mean, it's about the same thing.
If you go up to Buford, you got lots of restaurants to choose from.
We do.
There's lots of good stuff that way. So cool. Lots of cool things coming up, including Easter. So as you guys are listening, we are Monday of Holy Week and the day after Palm Sunday. So things are coming up. Here's a fun question or two about Easter. You guys have a favorite Easter memory or tradition from growing up as a kid or being a dad over all the years?
Food, man. Food is good. I like eating the ham.
The ham.
Glad I'm a Christian.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I can't. I remember growing up, Mom would always dress us like Miami Vice. So Andy and I would we'd always have matching coordinating outfits. That's about all I remember.
All you remember?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then those horrible candy eggs that she would get.
Cadbury's?
Oh no. Those are way too expensive. these were like, I don't even know what you would call it. It's like if a peep like sat out in the sun and baked to where it could chip your teeth. But just in the shape of an egg.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah. I don't even know if they make them. They probably were outlawed.
I have no idea.
So there's some little eggs. The Whopper eggs are really good.
No. It was just like pure corn syrup.
Interesting.
Wow.
Yeah.
These must have been done before
corn syrup and wax. I mean, my guess.
She didn't home make them, did she?
No.
Gross.
Oh, man.
Yeah. I remember my mom making sure we all looked our Sunday best for Easter Sunday, and of course hunting all those eggs. I made a joke one day, one Easter Sunday after church. This was when Tristan and I were dating. The weather was great, so we went disc golfing, and I was making a joke. I was like, whenever I was a kid, I was hunting eggs and trying to put them in baskets. Now I'm hunting aces and trying to put them in baskets. So not much changed. Not much changed in that way. So, hey, here's a fun one. So, Holy Week, you've got a lot of biblical events surrounding the story of Jesus in this week: death, burial, resurrection. It is really a good week to kind of slow down and think and ponder, to celebrate, to feel the weight of sin and all these different things. So, this is just kind of a fun question. Do you plan on this week doing anything a little bit different with your rhythms to kind of sit, slow down, and think through the events that took place?
I actually hadn't even thought about that until you texted that in the rundown today. And so I don't know the answer on that. I hadn't even contemplated that. I assume my rhythms will look pretty much the same as they normally do. But that
it's the word rhythm.
Yeah, that's why they're rhythm.
Yeah, love it.
I might do the alarms again.
Yeah.
And that's something, I mean, you can talk about that. That was kind of either your idea or a friend from college and it kind of took or whatever. So yeah, tell everybody it's
good.
Yeah.
I kind of set my alarms for all of the events. So if you read through some of the gospels, you can get a pretty good idea of like, oh, this is the exact time that Jesus was crucified. Oh, this was the exact time that he was hung on the cross, like all these different things. And so I like to set alarms through the day of like different types of those events. And the first time I ever did it, it was kind of revealing to how quickly everything moved. Like you get Garden of Gethsemane on Thursday night and then boom, he's betrayed. And then boom, he's in front of Caiaphas and they've got that illegal trial. And then boom, he's in front of Pilate. And then he's already being crucified by like 9 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
Or something like that. And then it just like the alarms just kept going off faster than I expected them to go off. And so to just think about like that specific 24-hour period, how quickly everything moved, was kind of revealing to me. So that's fun. I usually do that, try to set those alarms, and then as they go off, to just try to think about the moment. So it'll be fun. It'll be really, really fun. And, of course, the Seder meal, that'll be different part of the room. We are doing it a day late, though, Josh.
I know.
Not on Passover Thursday.
We were occupied that day.
Yes, we were.
So,
yep. No doubt. All right. Hey, so let's jump into the sermon finally. Okay, so we are in the series Encounters, taking a look at some of the stories of Jesus encountering people in the Gospels. Kind of our hope is that we would encounter him as well. And so yesterday, Josh, you talked through Pontius Pilate, the encounter that Jesus had with Pontius Pilate. And truthfully, as I recall, this might be the first sermon I've ever heard that focused on him in great details. Now, I may have heard the story of Pilate and Jesus preach, but not so much focused on Pilate. And so it was really, really great. I would love for you to give us a recap of where you went.
Yeah, so when we were thinking about the series and just kind of picking things out, I saw the 24th, which was Palm Sunday. And so thinking that one of the events closer to the crucifixion would kind of make sense chronologically as, you know, anyway.
Sure.
And it was just intriguing to me to think about that Pilate interaction. So recap being, Pilate is the, you know, Roman authority in Jewish land. He's far, far away from home, but he's trying to make a name for himself within the ranks of Roman government. And obviously he is a Roman. He thinks like a Roman. When he asks, you know, like, is it true you're a king or whatever? Like, he's not really even asking Messiah at all. Like, he's totally just trying to understand what this guy is. And he's a nervous wreck because his job's on the line, trying to get out of crucifying Jesus. Depending on how you count, sometimes you get up to 10 times he tries to get rid of Jesus in all four Gospels. And then in this story, he's in and out of his headquarters 7 times. So there's just so much indecision, so much fear. But then also, I mean, part of what we talked about is just the pride as well as just seeing Jesus and the Roman or and the Jewish people in general as just lesser than him. He was a Roman, they were not, and he was the force. And it's just the irony to me was so striking of both Pilate and Jesus are very driven towards a goal.
Sure.
Both are doing it very differently. I mean, Jesus stood resolutely and did not defend himself. He answered some of the questions, but not all of them.
Sure.
He was beaten through flogging within an inch of his life. And actually rewatched one of the scenes this past week from the Passion of the Christ. And whenever they showed that, they showed him kind of tied up to the pillar and his hands are in the chains and they beat him and flog him and stuff. And then at one point he falls down, but then he grips the chains and the hooks and like pulls himself back up. And it was just Mel Gibson's way, I guess, of saying, I am here. This is what I'm here for. I'm resolutely like staying here. I'm not running. And Pilot tried to run the whole time is what I'm kind of getting to now. So yeah, just fascinating. Pilot was driven by a lot of things. Like I said, fear, pride. And then ultimately at the end, you see him just compromise really what he didn't want to do. He didn't want to release Jesus, or he wanted to release Jesus. He didn't want to crucify him, but just was so nervous about his job and pleasing people that he ended up crucifying him, even against his own intuition and his wife, who had this dream that said, "Stay away from that man. I suffered terribly in the dream."
Yeah, right.
So it's just a lot for us to wrestle with. How are we like him, and how can we not compromise? So sure. I know that's a lot. Sorry to talk
Yeah,
long,
yeah.
But
no, it's
that's
good.
Just, yeah, it was a lot this week. Super fun.
Yeah. Adam, as you're reading through and looking forward to hearing this one, what are some things that jump out to you?
I think for me, sometimes, as weird as it sounds, I do find myself feeling sorry for Pilot sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Cause yeah. I do feel like, now,
yeah, he's stuck between a rock and a hard place, or whatever that saying is.
Yeah, right? They've got him over a barrel.
Yeah.
You know,
another phrase would be a catch 22. He cannot do the right thing.
Yeah, he cannot do the right thing. No matter what he does, he is going to make the wrong choice, at least politically.
Sure.
Yes.
Morally speaking, uh-huh. You know, all those other things, he can probably make a better choice than what
he does. And that's where I think the challenge for us is keep going.
No, it's just so it, sometimes I feel like I do feel sorry for him, but at the same time, also remembering that, you know, it's not the crowd, it's not Herod, it's not Pilate, and it's not even Caesar who sends Jesus to the cross. Mm-hmm. It's the Father. This is the Father has orchestrated all these events to get it to this point because this is how salvation comes to us. And so. It just kind of puts you in that weird position with Pilate of like, mm-hmm. Do we get mad at him or do we pity him?
Or do we thank him?
Do we thank him? I mean, where do we even go, you know, whenever it comes to this guy? But yeah, it is. It's that catch 22 thing. And I think that'd be just my initial thought.
Yes.
Just sit and think about it.
Yeah. Josh, you set us up for the conversation right away, and you mentioned already that Pilate was driven by pride and fear, and then he ultimately compromised the truth. And so you asked kind of the question to get us thinking at the beginning of the sermon is just like, we see what drives Pilate, mm-hmm. So what drives us? And so I want to jump into the story and give some highlights from the story rather than kind of reading through it.
Yeah, it was a lot.
it was a lot of story, and I love it. But one of the things that jumps out right at the beginning was that Jesus was on trial before he ever saw Pilate. So why don't you give us some background? What's going on here for really the mind of the Jews who are taking him to Pilate after that trial? Maybe put that part of the story into the context of the larger narrative of what's happening.
Yeah. So if you count them, I think there's six different phases of trial. And the story we did was like there's two parts of the Roman trial. Or maybe three parts, I guess, because he goes to Herod, and that's told in Luke. But before that, it was the religious leaders. And so when John says the Jews, if you're reading a translation that says the Jews, when he says the Jews, he means the religious leaders.
Sure.
Not just the Jewish people in general. So they've been driving towards this for a while, where they want to arrest Jesus and finally do that Thursday night and take him at night, like you said earlier, to the house of Caiaphas, the high priest. And they know they don't have the power of capital punishment, at least at that time under the Roman rule. It was Romans who had to put people to death.
Sure.
In Jewish law, it would have been stoning anyway.
Right.
And sometimes you see that even in Acts, you know, Stephen is stoned.
Mm-hmm.
But technically, I think if the history matches up, I think Romans had even stripped them of that right at that time. And so they know if we want this guy dead, we have to bring him to Jesus, or have to bring him to the Roman authority, to bring Jesus to the Roman authority. And it's interesting, Pilate first, he's like, doesn't want to deal with it, but he goes out to him and he's like, what has this guy done? And they just totally beat around the bush. They're like, if he hadn't done anything wrong, we wouldn't be here. Like, answer the question, right?
You think we're stupid, Pilate? Come on, man.
Yeah, and so it's just funny. That's why they bring him to to Rome. It's because they've tried their own way and they can only get so far.
Yeah. Yeah, that's their perspective. One of the things that you also pointed out was Pilate's perspective. An interesting detail that you mentioned several times is that Pilate had to come out to the crowd instead of their approaching him. Tell us a little bit about why that would have been the case.
So the laws of cleanliness and uncleanliness for the Jewish people, if they were in the presence of like a Gentile or area in that time, they wouldn't be clean to eat the Passover. And some people are thinking, well, they already ate the Passover last night, but the Passover is a week long event and there are other meals. And obviously we already had enough to talk about. We didn't get into this, but I believe the meal is called the Haggigah.
Haggigah?
Another meal. So it's Chagigah.
Okay.
Haggigah.
I'll take your word for it on how to pronounce it.
It's another meal they would eat. And also you have to think about too that just 400,000 people swelled that city. And so the math might not even work out for all of those lambs to be slaughtered on one day. You know, it just might not be physically possible to do all of that all at once.
Right.
So there's, what I'm trying to say is they're trying to stay clean for the whole week, mm-hmm. the whole celebration.
I got
it's
you.
A week long.
Yeah. And you've mentioned even then in the sermon, I remember you talking about how swelling to 400,000 was probably the reason that Pilate was there in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He would live 70 miles away in Caesarea by the sea. And he had a place there. Actually, I didn't talk about this, but in the Israel tour, there's in archaeology, there's a stone that was found there that has his name on it. So it kind of points to the Pilate of history.
Sure.
So that's kind of cool. But he lived there, but he would come to Jerusalem for the major festivals to keep the peace.
Yeah. So. Right. Yeah. Love that. That's a great detail to think about. Now, you mentioned at a certain point in the story, now you took us through John chapter 18 and 19 for mm-hmm. this text, but you mentioned Luke chapter 23 as well, fills a gap as we kind of like are reading through the stories. The problem the crowd had with Jesus was that he claimed to be the Christ.
Mm-hmm.
So let's just kind of talk through as you obviously spent your time in John 18, but you also were mentioning Luke 23. What are some of the other differences between some of the ways that the gospel writers kind of account and tell the story?
Well, so Matthew is the only one that mentions a dream. He's actually the only New Testament writer. There's 7 dreams in the New Testament, and 6 of them are in Matthew.
Interesting. I didn't know that.
Joseph has 4 of them.
Okay.
Anyway, that's just a fun detail.
Yeah.
But so he's the only one that mentions that Pilate's wife has a dream. But Luke mentions specifically, he's the only one that mentions that he went to Herod. Essentially, Pilate, he remembers or finds out that, oh yeah, Jesus is from Galilee. And he's like, this is Herod's job. It's not my job. So it's one of the ways he tries to get off the hook.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Again.
So he's
like,
sending him to Herod.
I'm trying to get rid of this. I don't want to deal with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, I had a little fun this week. I watched some of Jesus Christ Superstar to prep for the sermon.
Nice.
I've never actually seen that. So I watched some of it and it's really funny. But you see that unfold there where the Pilate character comes out and he says, I know that you're news, but are you king? Are you king of the Jews? You know, and then he finds out he's king of the Jews and he's like, oh, this is, you know, Herod's problem. So he sends him off to Herod. But then all Herod wants to see is a miracle. He's like,
right.
Hey, walk across my water, raise, you know, heal this disease, blind someone, or like, he doesn't say those things, but you can just imagine Herod saying, work a miracle for me. And when he doesn't do that, he's like, yeah, go back to Pilate. So.
Yeah, that's interesting. Okay, so Jesus mentions whenever Pilate asked him that question about king and kingdom and all that sort of stuff, which would put a kind of a red warning sign for a Roman who's trying to keep the peace mm-hmm. and trying to maintain dominance. You get anybody claiming kingship or anything like that. It's like, yeah, I guess I got to talk to this guy a little bit. So whenever they have that conversation, Jesus mentions a kingdom for this world rather than from this world. Adam, I'd love to hear from you. And then from Josh, what do you think Pilate is considering this to mean? So as Pilate is hearing Jesus say a kingdom for this world rather than from this world, what do you think goes on in his mind?
I don't think he has a clue.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
It is a what would the word be? Non sequitur. There's nothing that registers in his brain.
Nope.
That there could actually be a kingdom that's not of this world.
Okay.
Because for him, it's all about political power. It's all about, I mean, he's a bit of a cockroach in terms that he's just always able to kind of weasel out of stuff and kind of get where he needs to be.
Yeah.
Very adept politically.
So one of the parts of the study this last week, I was looking at all the Roman rulers kind of along that line. So starting way back with like Herod the Great, and then yep. It changed to some Roman prefects, and then it went back to Herod Agrippa. So one of his sons, Herod's mm-hmm. great sons, and then went to a Roman procurator is what it was called after okay. that. And all of them last pretty, like they're pretty quick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Pilate and one other person lasted about 10 years.
Yeah.
But nobody lasted longer than 2 or 3 years. So yeah, he is that cockroach.
Yeah. You just can't get rid of him. And so I'm sure he is just absolutely just befuddled. Like, why would a king not be of a kingdom on
right.
this earth?
Yeah.
What are you?
Why would his people not fight for him?
Why would his people not yeah. fight for him?
Yeah, sure.
So yeah, I think I'm sure he's just befuddled.
Yeah, he's confused. Doesn't really know what's going on.
He certainly doesn't have a concept of monotheism.
Sure, right.
And God's kingdom like that. Because later it is interesting when the whole question when he says, "Where are you from?" Some people think, "Well, that was a stupid question." Of course, he knows he's from Galilee. Other people think, like, some wheels are maybe starting to turn because of the dream that his wife had and all that. Like, all right, what is there something else going on? Because the gods would be very much on his mind.
Sure. You
know, pleasing them. And so if this.
Right. And the way that somehow, he pleases them is by appeasing Rome.
Correct.
You know,
yeah.
the big bad kingdom of the world.
But Adam's right. Yeah. He has no idea that a kingdom could look any bit different than force and power and just, mm-hmm. Punching people down that don't agree with you or yeah. are not on mission with you.
Yeah. Yeah. And so Pilate continues to have this interaction with Jesus, and it appears that he just continues to kind of be confused. He doesn't want to crucify the guy, but he doesn't want to cause an uproar in the city of Jerusalem with 400,000 people, because
mm-hmm.
That will definitely make its way to the inbox of emperor,
uh-huh.
and it'll get him in a little bit of trouble for not doing his job well. And so he has Jesus flogged. That's still not enough for the crowd, and they play what you called the trump card. So what is the trump card, and why was it so powerful?
Well, they said, if you don't do this, you're no friend of Caesar. Mm. And that was a way to say, Adam, I love how he put this in the comment, if you're not Caesar's friend, you're Caesar's corpse.
Yeah, that's a good one.
And that's what had happened. Yeah. The fun Roman history, I mentioned his name in there, is a guy named Sejanus, who was a friend of Pilate. He was a close connection for him, for Emperor Tiberius. He's why Pilate got his job in the first place.
Sure.
But then the timing historically works out to where Sejanus had just been murdered by Tiberius because he was suspected of treason and mm-hmm. plotting against Tiberius. And so if you're not Tiberius's friend, you're his corpse.
Yeah.
And so Sejanus has been killed, and Pilate's almost like, am I next?
And it's not just Sejanus. I mean, it's his family. It's his friends. Yeah. I mean, it's just like the movies to where they talk about he's such a bad dude that he'll not only kill you, but he's coming after everybody who knows you.
Yeah.
And that's what Tiberius does. And so, no friend of Caesar. It's a John Ortberg line that you're either Caesar's okay. friend or Caesar's corpse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so if you're not a friend of Caesar, you're a traitor. And that does not go well.
Yeah.
So they've got him. It's the catch
cornered.
22.
Yeah, they've cornered him, and really, Pilate ultimately says, all right, he's not guilty. I don't think that it's in John that we get this part, so tell me which gospel it is, but he ends up like washing his hands, right?
That's Matthew as well.
So he washes his hands to kind of demonstrate, like, I am innocent of this man's blood and all that sort of stuff, but this is what you guys want, and so here you go, and ultimately delivers Jesus up to be crucified. Now, here's kind of an interesting question. Pilate sends Jesus off to be crucified. Maybe he's still confused, or maybe he kind of has an idea. What would you say Pilate thinks of Jesus by the end of this encounter? Maybe not necessarily on his identity, but just like, what do you think his opinion is of the guy?
I think he's confused.
Okay.
Like, what in the world? Because I think he would see him as someone who is totally weak and misguided, going about kingdom the wrong way.
Right.
Like, it just does not make sense to him how he would, like, why he would even be before him. He was a problem he never wanted to have.
Right.
So I don't know. It's hard to think.
Can you imagine Pilate kind of like having the interaction with Jesus and kind of walking away thinking, this guy's just a little crazy, kingdom. I'm confused about why the Jews are in an uproar about this guy because I don't think he's done anything wrong. So really, he's just like, this whole dude is an anomaly. He's just got to be a little bit weird, a little bit crazy. And it reminds me of some of the things that we talked about in the teen room not too long ago. We were doing a series called Christianity Deconstructed and kind of going through the basics of faith so that we could build back a better and stronger one. And we were answering the question, who is Jesus? So like, we have an encounter with Jesus. We're going to have to decide what we want to do with him. Who is he? Mm-hmm. And really the four options that we talked about and presented were he's either a liar or he's a lunatic or he's a legend or he's Lord. And I would think if Pilate was going to have to choose one of those four to go through, I would think him walking away saying, the guy's a lunatic.
Lunatic, yeah.
He's just crazy. But at the end of the day, Jesus predicted his death and resurrection, and then it happened exactly like you said it would. I don't think that there's any lunacy in that. Mm-hmm. I think that there's some Lord in that. So you just kind of see that all over the place. But it's pretty clear from what you said up front. Okay, so Pilate, in this whole interaction, you see him driven by pride, you see him driven by fear, and then ultimately he compromises the truth. He does something that he didn't really feel comfortable doing anyway. So I want to talk through each of these because this is where you kind of landed. And just kind of asking the question, how are we similar to Pilate? You know, we might not ever think that we would deliver Jesus over to be crucified, and we probably wouldn't. But we still are driven a lot by some of these things that Pilate was driven by. And so I want to talk through each of these. Let's talk through pride. Why is it bad to be driven by pride? And what are some ways that we often fall into that trap?
Well, yeah, the question ended up being rephrased a little bit. It's kind of maybe the other side of the coin of what's driving us is what's keeping me from following Jesus.
Okay.
And so pride sometimes does that because on the one hand, you think, I don't need saving, you know,
sure.
Or I figured it out myself. I've worked enough. I've done enough things, or I'm not that too bad in the first place. I think one of the comments you put in there, Luke, was this is just sin. Pride is sin, you know?
Yeah.
Where you think I can do this. I'm my own master, you know? Mm-hmm. So
sure. Adam, what do you think about pride?
Yeah. I don't remember who it was, that said it, but it's basically, it's the mother of all sin, or the most base of all sin or the base of all sin.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And so you see it in the Garden of Eden and you just see it all the way through. And I think that the idea of pride is what will blind us to the fact that we actually need saving. And we say it multiple times. We've said it multiple times, you know, until you see yourself as a sinner, you'll never see your need for a savior. And what is it that blinds us to that need? It's our pride. You know, it's that puffed up view of self that can keep us from that. And then even after we become Christians, it's even the thing that can keep us from following Jesus in the way that he wants us to do, mm-hmm. or in the way that he
wants us to follow him.
Yeah. And the way that he wants us to follow him is just like, well, I don't need to do that. Or, you know, why would he be able to say that to me? And, and so, yeah, it's just, it just keeps us from seeing where we need to go because it blinds us.
Yeah. It blinds us. And, it doesn't help us interact with other people well either. You know, like if we don't recognize our need for saving, or if we do believe in Jesus and are somewhat following him, but we still are so proud that we're like, well, I believe in Jesus, but I'm good. You're like, I'm good because I'm better than that person.
Right.
Right? That's so like,
yeah,
that's, you know, it's the comparison game that pride doesn't help you with either whenever you're trying to follow Jesus well.
Yep.
And so what are some ways we fall into that trap of pride, and maybe what is a way that we could kind of get out of that?
I think you hit a big one where you just say it's the comparison trap to
sure.
other people. And so I've come back to this before. I love the verse in I think it's 1 Timothy where Paul says Christ Jesus came to save sinners, and I am the worst.
Yeah,
and so just. Not in a a super downer way, but like you got to live humbly with that declaration pretty consistently. Just say, God, thank you for saving me because I am the chief of all sinners.
Yeah.
And recognize that.
Yeah.
Well, it's like our friend Paul David Tripp says, it's we preach the gospel to ourselves.
Yep.
And okay. So no one talks to you more than you do. And so what are you preaching to yourself? And one of the things is just the reminder on a daily basis, you know, whether it's through gratitudes or other reflective rhythms, to just be like, I have been saved. I am a sinner saved by grace.
Mm-hmm.
I am purchased. I've been bought. And so that just kind of keeps us at this place to where we're not into, I don't need to self-protect. I don't need to self-promote.
Mm-hmm.
Because everything I've done is already known by one.
Yep.
And there's nothing about myself that I need to promote, because Jesus himself says that he loves me enough that he would die for me. So why do I need to promote myself?
Yeah, I think of Jesus' words also, just blessed are the meek,
yeah,
they'll inherit the earth.
Sure.
So you don't need to, like Adam said, promote yourself. You rest in the truth, mm-hmm, that you've already been given everything you need.
Yeah, I love it. And nobody else really appreciates a self-promoter anyway. So you're kind of annoying if you correct do that. But let's jump into the next one. You see Pilate also driven by fear. Talk to us a little bit about how we are often driven by fear as well. Why is this a bad thing? What are some ways that we often fall into this trap?
Well, he was definitely driven by fear because, like I said earlier, he went in and out 6 or 7 different times. And it was always about, how can I please people? How can I please the emperor? How can I please people? Or the crowd, I mean. And so I think those same questions are, you know, valid for us too. Like sometimes we are fearful that we're not going to please people.
Sure.
And sometimes people is ourself. And so the fear of what lies on the other side of that decision drives us to do some things we don't want to do, or not do the things we know we should.
Yeah.
You know, we're fearful that God's going to ask us to do something that we just don't want to. It's going to make us a little uncomfortable. We might have to give a little more money than we want to. We might need to talk to somebody that we don't like.
Sure.
We might have to give up a habit that we're really comfortable with. God might ask us to move. Who knows?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. No, somebody was relaying a conversation they were having with somebody the other day, and it's like one of the things that is preventing them from following Jesus fully right now is they're like, well, I know that if I follow Jesus, then I'm going to have to forgive this person.
Mm.
And I'm not ready to do that.
Yeah.
And so it's just the fear of forgiveness. You know, mentor Alan tells the story of that when he was kind of afraid to become a Christian because he was afraid God was going to send him to Africa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then he realized that God probably wouldn't send somebody to Africa who didn't want to go to Africa. And like he'd be a lousy missionary, you know, kind of going to do that. But
sure.
But I think that there are those fears that are just kind of there that, you know, Jesus is going to ask. Well, how about this? I think the fear is founded. Okay. Jesus will ask you to do something you don't want to do.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sure.
Absolutely.
And so the question is, are you going to allow that fear to keep you from following? Because if Jesus never asks me to do something that I don't want to do, then that means I'm in charge and he's not.
Yeah.
And I'm dictating the pace, and right, I'm not following. He's not leading. Mm-hmm. I'm leading.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So in some ways, I think that the fear is understandable.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I know a lot of the teenagers that I've talked to, and I've even seen this in different seasons of my life, just even in regards to like rhythms and sitting, mm-hmm, in the presence of God prayerfully and meditation on scripture, all that sort of stuff. There have been seasons of my life, and a lot of students share this with me as well, where they get out of that rhythm and habit because God is asking them to do something that makes them uncomfortable. And so it's easier for me to just avoid, mm-hmm, the presence of God because I don't want the Holy, yeah, Spirit prompting me to do something I'm not ready to do.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And yeah, so that's a total fear thing. Like he's going to ask you to do something you don't want to do. It may be to humble yourself. It may be to, mm-hmm, confess a sin. It may be to, go to a Bible college, mm-hmm, far away from home. Like it could be a variety of different things, but I think and this kind of goes back to the message I preached a little bit. It's just like, you're going to have to either choose fear or trust.
Mm-hmm.
And if God is the creator and sustainer of the universe. He's sovereign over everything. He probably knows what's best for you. No, probably about it. He does. And so the other side of the fear is trusting, and that's going to be better in the long run.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, just love that as well. So you see this with Pilate, the pride and the fear then lead to the compromise of the truth. How does that often end up being the landing spot whenever someone is driven by pride or fear? So you see it, they're driven by pride or fear, and then boom, compromise of the truth. How does that happen?
I mean, I feel like it's just pretty self-explanatory. We're scared, and so we end up not doing the thing we should, or doing the things we know we shouldn't, and then we're left with regret, or we're left with pain, or we're left with without a good thing that God wants to give us because we never said yes.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said earlier, it's really like procrastination in general. You know, like
sure.
we think it's going to be easier to put that thing off, but then, you know, the stack of papers is a foot high because we never dealt with it, and it's actually more painful later to deal with it,
right,
than just doing it right away.
Yeah.
I think that as you look at Pilate, you know, he compromised because he did what he didn't really want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
I mean, he really, I find no fault in him. I'm washing my hands, you know, of this guy. My wife told me I shouldn't do anything about this. And so he compromised. And so for us, it comes into, there are times whenever we find ourselves, this is Romans, it's Romans 7.
I do what I want to do.
We're doing what we don't want to do. And so it makes us feel compromised, you know, where we're walking in ways that we know that we shouldn't. And I think that the kicker is that whenever you continue to do it. So Pilate knew that he shouldn't do this, but he went ahead and did it anyway.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So it's not just I'm doing what I don't want to do. It's I know I shouldn't do this, but I'm going to do it anyway.
Right.
And so I think for a lot of our, you know, listeners on Sunday mornings, that's kind of what happens as well, mm-hmm. to where we compromise our faith, we compromise our relationship with Jesus because we continue to walk in our way instead of his. And that not only harms us, but that harms the people around us, that harms our church, it harms the folks that we're trying to set an example for and lead to Christ. We're compromised. And so that's where we find ourselves trying to wash our hands of what we've done, but it's like, yeah, you can't really do that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I threw out some examples. This will back us up again into fear, but I threw out some examples in the comments, Josh, and when you sent this out, and it's like, just practically, like, I want to stop working 80 hours a week and be a better husband and a dad, but I'm afraid that I won't be able to provide for the ones that I love. And so mm-hmm. I'll compromise and I'll continue to work 80 hours a week, mm-hmm. right? I feel like God is calling me to move somewhere to go do something, but I'm afraid of leaving my family and friends. And so I'll compromise and I'll stay and I'll miss out on whatever God had for me on the other mm-hmm. side of that.
Mm-hmm.
I want to give up the bottle and the pill, but I'm afraid that I won't be able to cope any other way.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm going to keep on going with this. And then we end up creating a bigger hole for ourselves, compromising again and again, deciding to do things our way rather than to do things God's way because we haven't developed the capacity to trust him yet. And so I think that's huge. And it's a good word and a challenge for us to think through that question that you asked us at the beginning. What are we driven by?
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to be the type of follower that's driven by pride or by fear. And because I know that's inevitably going to end up holding me back from following Jesus well. I want to be the type of follower that is driven by the voice of the Spirit and by trust in who God is and what he says to do. And I'm praying that all of you listening would desire that as well, and that we can go all in together and do the best that we can. So, love, the sermon from yesterday, your bottom line was a question, and it was, what will you do with Jesus? So talk us through that question, Josh.
I think it's the question, obviously, Pilate was facing the entire time. Just, what am I going to do with this guy? For him, he was a pesky problem that would not go away. Adam, I love that you said cockroach.
Yeah.
It's funny. They can survive, you know, the apocalypse and still be around. And for him, he was like, so it's funny, Pilate was a cockroach, but I think he probably thought Jesus was one too, to him. It's like, sure, man, this guy won't go away.
Mm-hmm.
And he had to, he eventually had to make a decision.
Yeah.
He tried 7 times going in and out. He tried 10 times to get rid of Jesus, but he's eventually, he had to actually go one way or the other. And we do too.
Yeah. Yeah. You've got to decide what you're going to do with Jesus. And that's going to be the most important decision you make. What are you going to do with Jesus? Who is he to you? So challenge was to identify your hurdle. I think you're talking through pride, fear, whatever else. So talk us through the challenge and then we'll wrap it up for today.
Yeah, that's the idea, is just maybe one of those 3 words resonated with you as you listen. Maybe it's like, hey, pride is my hurdle. I don't think I need a savior very much. Or maybe it's fear. I have some things that I'm scared Jesus is going to ask me to do or to be. So that's a hurdle. Or maybe it's I'm just compromising in my life all over the place. And that's the hurdle. Or maybe it's something else. You write it in yourself.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's the idea. What's the hurdle to get you to follow Jesus? So
yeah, I love it. Good stuff. Adam, any last thoughts?
No.
All right, we'll wrap up with something fun. Of course, Easter, as you guys are listening, is Sunday. So we're going to do a game that's not really a competition, but rather just to facilitate some conversation that should be a little bit of fun. It's called Awesome or Overrated. So Easter,
so hot takes.
Easter things, traditions. Look, I didn't say the word hot takes. This is just the game that was there. Okay, so I'm going to throw out a Easter tradition or something like that. And you guys tell us, awesome or overrated. All right. First one is the chocolate bunny. The chocolate bunny.
Overrated.
Overrated for Adam, overrated for Josh, and overrated for Luke as well.
It's hollow.
Yes, that's exactly what I was going to say. If it's a solid bunny,
yeah,
that's a lot of chocolate. That might be more on the lines of... Yeah.
Fill it with peanut butter.
Of exactly
I
rated.
Ooh, I can't do the peanut butter. That would be a lot
have
of
you
peanut
got
butter.
Those huge, like, those huge Reese's that are...
Yeah, I have a... Well, it's not whether Reese's is a Hershey's Kiss. I have a scar on my wrist because of one. So.
A scar on your wrist because of a massive Hershey's Kiss.
Yeah, I was about 8 years old, and my grandma Turner had bought me one, and I was trying to slice a piece of chocolate off of it, and it slid out, and it just got my left wrist. And
knife got it. Okay. Yeah. I was imagining the very tip of the Hershey's Kiss impaling your wrist or something like that.
Yeah.
I'm like, that was well made, Hershey's. Well
done.
It was
in the freezer before.
Yeah, the freezer. That's right.
I actually think I have that knife in my kitchen drawer.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah?
Yeah.
All right, let's go to Easter egg hunt. Awesome or overrated?
Overrated.
Age and stage, man. Age and stage.
Age and stage.
Yeah.
Yeah. I enjoyed it when I was a kid. Overrated by the time I was a teenager.
Well, yeah.
Oh, well. There we go. Egg painting.
Overrated.
Awesome or overrated?
My kids like it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I think this one's awesome.
And I like to eat the hard-boiled eggs.
I enjoyed this one a lot. I haven't done it in probably 6 years, but it's fun. It's kind of fun to dye the eggs and to paint the eggs. I would always try to do like a Chiefs one and a Spurs one and all that sort of stuff.
So we used to joke that we needed to hire a minister of fun. That would never be my job.
A minister of fun.
Yeah.
I would never get hired for that.
Yeah.
Overrated.
But a minister of lame?
I could
more up your alley, I guess. I don't know.
It's like
That was mean.
In Seinfeld when Kramer walks in and says, who wants to have some fun? And George is like, I'm just saying I want to have some fun. I really don't want to.
Yes.
All right, here we go. We already talked about this one. Chocolate eggs. Awesome or overrated?
I like the Cadbury eggs. I will go on record.
So is that what we're talking about is Cadbury eggs?
It just says chocolate eggs here, but you can look at the picture.
I like Cadbury eggs.
Those
little foil wrapped ones.
Yeah. Those are actually okay. They're not
fine. It's chocolate.
They're properly rated.
And they're not hollow.
Okay. Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's good. And the Whopper eggs though are so good.
They're fine.
The Whopper eggs.
That are good like that are the ones that have like the Rice Krispies.
Similar to the Crackle.
Yeah.
Or is that right?
Crunch or Crackle.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Love it. You know actually why they did the chocolate bunny hollow, right?
No.
Is this a dad joke?
Because the inside of the bunny is empty, just like the inside of the tomb.
Yeah.
Mm. So there you go. Easter dinner. Awesome
good.
Or overrated?
Properly rated?
Yeah, I like it.
What even is the traditional Easter dinner?
Ham.
It's a ham.
It's a nap after preaching all those services.
Yeah, that's right.
That's what it is.
So I will.
It'd be ham, scalloped potatoes.
Yep.
Maybe
green beans and rolls. Maybe
green beans and rolls.
So basically, Thanksgiving 2.0.
No, because it's ham, not turkey.
Like, well, people do ham on Thanksgiving too.
They do ham and turkey.
Ham and turkey.
So no stuffing or
deviled dressing. Eggs.
Deviled eggs.
Deviled eggs. Those are growing on me. I used to not like deviled eggs, but I can do them. I can eat them now. So there
they're
we go.
So good.
All right. Egg and spoon races. Oh, my goodness.
Underrated.
Underrated.
Sure. Why not?
Yeah. Why not? There we go. All right. Peeps. All right,
staff meeting Tuesday. We're doing
egg and spoon races.
Egg and spoon races and all right. See.
Peeps.
Overrated.
Oh, I love them. Oh, I think they're awesome. It's a marshmallow with
so
sugar
bad.
On it. Yeah. You know, I tried the Peepsy, the Pepsi Peeps.
Uh-huh.
Not bad. Pretty sweet after.
It was pretty bad
pretty
for me.
Sweet aftertaste. Okay, that's enough for today. All of the Easter awesome or overrated or perfectly rated. Jesus rising from the grave. Awesome.
Awesome.
Awesome. Yes. Awesome. And
underrated.
You coming to Corinth to celebrate that with us on Sunday. Awesome. And so we are looking forward to that. We'll be finishing up Encounters, we're just pumped to celebrate the resurrection of our Lord and Savior. So have a great week, and we'll see you then for that.